Okay, Acts chapter 20, verses 28 to 32. And here's the question. How many biblical offices do we find in the New Testament? And how should we appoint individuals to those offices? How should they function in the life of the church? So there are several questions that we have at the beginning of our lesson. How many offices? How do we appoint these officials or officers? And how do they function in the local church? So those are the three questions. Let's get some feedback, hopefully not through the microphone. Let's get some feedback from our class. So how many offices? Baptist distinctives.
Two.
Is that the peace sign or is that raising your hand? Eric's over here, peace. Two, there are two offices. Okay, good, we're going to talk about that. Secondly, how do we appoint those officers? Anybody have some ideas? Just church vote, okay. What should kind of precede the church vote? What do you think?
Qualification.
Qualification, okay. Very good. You know, how do we know who really should be in those positions or not? Should we appoint anybody who wants to be a pastor or a deacon to that position? No. Should we appoint someone to those offices who have no desire to be there? No, we shouldn't. So there's a balance between those two things. Just because somebody desires to be in that capacity does not mean that we should put them there. And just because somebody, we want them to be there, doesn't mean necessarily that we should put them there. Because if their heart's not in this, they will not function in a capacity that's going to be helpful to the church. Is it possible for someone to be in that position and then we have to remove them? Yes, that is possible too. And so we need to actually talk about several of these areas. How do they function in the church? Okay, we mentioned that there are two offices. What are those two offices?
Pastor and what?
Pastor and elder. Okay. We'll talk about that. Pastor and elder. All right. Any other ideas? A what? Elder and bishop. Yes. Huh?
Deacons.
Okay. Deacons. We have deacons at Anchor. Nobody mentioned deacons. What in the world? Did you mention deacon?
I just said elder.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Sorry. Yeah, when you don't raise your hand, somehow it just doesn't register. You don't hear it. Right? So we've had the term pastor mentioned, deacon mentioned. Did somebody mention bishop or overseer? Yes, bishop and elder. Okay, do we have elders at Anchor? Well, it depends on how you define elder, to be very honest with you, okay? Actually, technically, we have an elder, okay? We also have a bishop and a pastor. We're going to talk about why we don't see three different positions, but we have different ways that we refer to them. So with that in mind, let's look at this question. Why do we not recognize five offices? And here are the offices that are sometimes mentioned in churches. One is pastor, obviously. Elder, bishop, deacon, deaconess. Okay? A lot of churches have deaconesses, and that is sometimes a hotly debated one. But why is it that we only see two offices, not five? Well, let's go to Acts chapter 20, and I want us to look carefully at this passage. This is a really important passage as it relates to the question that's in front of us. Because obviously, pastor, elder, and bishop are all mentioned in the Bible. By the way, let me ask you, of those three terms, which one is used the most?
Elder.
Elder is. Which one is used the least?
Pastor.
Pastor. In fact, just going to make a statement here, the word pastor is never used as a title for the office. It's used to describe the function. But generally speaking, the term elder is used, And occasionally the term bishop or overseer is used. Episkopos is the word. But it's primarily elder. And I kind of am going to talk a little bit about their culture and why the term elder was used so much. But we'll get to that in just a second. So Acts chapter 20, let's begin in verse 17 to kind of get our context, and then we'll transition down to verse 27. Acts 20, verse 17 says this, "From Miletus, he sent to Ephesus," that's Paul, "and he called the elders of the churches." Now, when Paul calls the, or not, actually, the elders of the church, sorry, it doesn't say churches, the elders of the church, what church is being viewed here? The church at what? Ephesus. This is a very established church, fairly large church by this time. Obviously, they have multiple individuals who are functioning in the pastoral elder capacity. So that means that they had several people in their congregation who were biblically qualified. They had recognized that and they were established. And they needed that many individuals in that capacity. Just a side comment, but in most cases, we see the term elder used in the plural. So generally speaking, there is a team of pastors working together. Now, that doesn't... I'm not giving you that information because I'm a Presbyterian in my polity, okay? I'm just being honest with the text. The text uses the term elders almost every time that it refers to them in a passage. So Ephesus has multiple pastors. They're working together, if you will, as a team. That doesn't mean that there wasn't a chain of command. Some had more of a teaching role than others. Some had more of a responsibility because they were senior, not suggesting that there was just an absolute equality or that there was a pastor and then a side group of elders, not making that suggestion at all. He's talking to the leadership, if you will, the pastors of the church. And now look at verse 27, because this is what Paul says to those men. Verse 27, "I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God." 28, "Take heed, therefore, unto yourselves and to all of the flock." Now, can anybody tell me why that phrase, "take heed to yourselves," is important? Yeah, great illustration. So you're on, you know, the whole reason why you do that is not because you don't care about the people around you. If you want to help the people around you, then you have to make sure that you're not dead. So you put the mask on your face so that you don't die, and then you're now in a position to help other people. So you have to make sure that you are staying sharp and focused and accountable in those things. But who is it that's helping with that accountability here? He says to the elders, "Take heed to yourselves." What's the point there?
Each other.
Yeah, look out for each other. So you're a group of men that are overseeing this church. You're leading, you're preaching, you're teaching, you're running the business of the church. You are primarily accountable to one another because each other is going to look out for one another. And then also, they're accountable to the congregation as well. But they're accountable to one another. And then he says this, "And to the flock, all the flock, over which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers." Now that word flock is used in a what kind of context? Pastoral, shepherding kind of context, okay? So when he mentions the word flock, you know that in his mind, these people have a shepherding role, a pastoral role, a role of overseeing, taking care of spiritually, leading these people. They are pastoring the church, the flock of God. And then he says, "over which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers." And there's that word bishop. Same words translated bishop in 1 Timothy, where it says, if a man desires the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be And he goes on to this list. So clearly, he's talking to the elders. He's telling them they need to pastor the church of God, and God has made them overseers. Can anyone tell me why that's significant to our discussion about whether or not we have one office or three offices when we talk about this? Why is that significant? Yes.
It's the same office, but they're going through different things.
Yes. The same office, and all three of those words are used. Elder, pastor, and bishop are all used in that context. And what that tells us is it's the same office. You can be talking about it from the eldering standpoint. You can be talking about it from the pastoring standpoint or from the bishop overseeing standpoint. But it's the same office, not three different offices. Because if it was three different offices, in verse 17, he would have said, he sent to Ephesus and called the elders, the bishops, and the pastors. It just says the elders. They're the same office. We continue on. Verse 29. Know this, after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Now he's using an illustration. He's telling them they have a responsibility. What is that responsibility that he is alluding to? To do what?
Watch out for the sheep.
To watch out for the sheep. So a pastor's job is to make sure that the congregation is safe from those who will cause them spiritual harm. This is why he teaches the word. This is why he calls people aside and says, hey, I need to talk to you about this. I'm concerned about this issue. This is why he prays with people. He counsels with people. This is why he's trying to stay aware of what's going on in the culture, in the church culture, in our national culture. A pastor needs to keep an eye on these things because his job is to warn people. It's to protect them. It's to help them. By the way, that's something that we should embrace as a church. Thank God that God has put someone in your life who's looking out for your spiritual well-being. He really cares about what's going on in your life. So he talks about their role. Verse 29, or verse 30. Also for your own selves, from your own selves shall men arise speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. Now when he says from among yourselves, is he talking about from the church or from those men in leadership? The leadership. Okay? So he's warning them that, hey, I'm concerned. In fact, I'm predicting that what's going to happen is from your group of men, the leaders of this church, the pastoral people preaching and overseeing and all those individuals, there will be some who will actually draw people away. And we really have to be cautious of that, he's saying. He then goes on in verse 32. He says this, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among them which are sanctified. Very, very important text. The reason I draw it to your attention to this text is that all three words, pastoring, elder, and bishop, they're all used in this context. And what that tells us is that they are talking about the same office. We then come to the term elder. Elder is the most commonly used term in the New Testament for the pastoral office. And we do not have elders in our culture. Does anybody have elders in your family? Family elders? You have elders in your family?
Yeah, me. That's why we didn't raise our hand.
Yeah. Have you ever heard anybody, you know, does your family gather together, like the extended family gather together, like on a yearly basis, and all the family heads get together and deliberate and discuss matters? No. We don't have this in our culture. You know, when I was in Ghana, that was a very common thing. Very common. People would go back to their communities, their villages on a regular basis, and they would meet with the family elders. Okay? And those individuals would conduct family business. It was a very interesting dynamic. I never had seen that I've never seen that in our culture at all. But it's a very common part of their culture. In Jewish culture, we see that. In fact, it's interesting. Read the Old Testament carefully and see how many times it talks about Moses calling the elders of the people. Okay? So when we talk about church polity, one of the things that we need to recognize is that church polity in many ways flows out of the way that the synagogue was set up in those days. And so there were heads in the community, very respected men, who would get up and they would preach and they would teach and they would read from the Torah in that community, and they would lead in the worship. And in fact, if there weren't a certain number of men in a community, they couldn't even have a synagogue. And if they had a certain number of men in the community that were Jewish, then they were required to have a synagogue. And so when we talk about the term elder, what we're understanding is that they recognized that in the synagogue, there were some men who were in a position of leadership, and they would be the ones communicating the word of God in that synagogue. And that kind of flows into the church. We call it the pastor. And there are a lot of small churches, they have one pastor. As churches get bigger, they have more than one pastor. Some churches have 10 or 12 pastors, depending on how large the church is. There's no way that one man can manage 300 people. It's impossible. It would be chaotic, okay? And so that's the situation. Elder is the most common term used in the New Testament, and it really flows right out of their Jewish culture. Then we have the term bishop, essentially identical qualifications to the elders in Titus. So if we go to 1 Timothy chapter 3, it says, if a man desires the office of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. And he goes through this whole list. When we go to Titus chapter 1, Paul tells Titus, for this reason I left you in Crete, that you would appoint elders in every city. And then when we look at the qualifications of the elders, they're for all practical purposes the exact same. It's the same office, a different term being used. We then come to deacon. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 8 to 14, we have the qualifications mentioned for a deacon. Now, what is the authority of a deacon? Well, what does the word deacon mean? Huh?
Dust mover.
That's great, Ralph. I like that. Did you find that in Strong's Concordance? That was like the new Amplified Strong's. It has the idea of waiting tables, okay? It means a servant, okay? So a deacon's role is to free up those who are ministering in the word and in prayer so that they can focus on that role. So a deacon's authority really goes only as far as it's delegated to allow those who are involved in pastoral leadership to do what they're doing. And so when we see the first example of deacons, we see that in Acts chapter 6, there was a problem. And the problem was that some of the widows were being neglected. And basically those widows came and they complained and said, we are being neglected. And it was because of really a racial and cultural prejudice that was going on in the church. And so rather than the apostles saying, okay, we're going to go ahead and we're going to start caring for the widows, they said, we need to call a group of men who will be established as deacons, and we will appoint them to the work that is needed here. And so what deacons do is they take care of those issues. They could be distributing funds to people who are poor and have need, or people who have come through a very hard time, not necessarily that they're always in need, but because of a health issue or some crisis, they're in a position that they need financial help. That's what our deacon's fund is, okay? Basically, in those days, a widow was completely helpless in some situations. And so the church would actually take that widow and they would fully care for this woman because she had no living family members who could take care of her. You know, in our culture, we don't see those situations as much as they saw them there. But a person could become completely destitute because of the death of a spouse, because their children have died, or because they don't have any children. And so deacons are involved in those things. They're not given authority in a teaching capacity or in a spiritual oversight. It's to handle physical matters. And that's one of the reasons that there's no statement about deacons being apt to teach. Now, I'm not suggesting that a person, you know, can't be a deacon because they have the ability to teach and they need to be a pastor. That's not necessarily what we're saying. But what we're saying is that somebody can be a very godly individual, meet the biblical qualifications to be a deacon, and not necessarily have an aptitude to teach or a passion and a love for teaching like a pastor would. And sometimes that is what separates a pastor from a deacon when it comes to the practical qualifications. One has this passion to preach and teach the word, and the other does not have that passion. And God hasn't given him that. That's not the role that that individual plays in the church. We then come to a fifth word, and that's deaconess. And the word deaconess is not actually, we don't actually have it in our authorized version. But basically, deaconess is a way to translate deacon in the feminine. And there was an individual named Phoebe. It said that she was a servant in the church, and that word servant is in the feminine. And so some have said, well, Phoebe was a deacon in the feminine sense. She was a deaconess. The only challenge with that is that there is no example of qualification for a female deacon. We don't see that. We see that for pastor, elder, bishop. We see that for deacon, but we do not see that for a deaconess. Now, some have argued that it's talking about a man who's married, his wife is in a deacon-like role. Some have argued that it's a single lady who maybe is a widow, but she's young enough to help in the care, and so they take care of her, but she's also serving in the church. There are some that have argued for that. Some have argued that this was a lady who was unmarried who would assist the deacon and his wife when it came to caring for ladies. So these are all suggestions, but the reason that I don't hold that there is a deaconess office in the church is because we don't have any qualifications mentioned for that one. But we do know that ladies, it could be single ladies, it could be ladies who are widows, it could be ladies whose children are no longer in the home, can have a valuable ministry in the same kind of way that a deacon would, in preparing meals, in helping with household duties when a person is sick. There are a lot of things that ladies are able to do. And so that's kind of where that comes from. But is there any question about that? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the biblical context, obviously in a modern era, deacon carries a little bit of weight, but in the biblical context, what is would be the definition of the difference?
Between? Well,
I'm
arguing that we don't have the deaconess as an office, but we do have ladies in the church who function in a very similar capacity to what it is. In fact, let's just give a real practical situation. Let's say that there is an older lady who she is being cared for by the church. Okay, maybe not totally financially, but maybe in part financially. Or, we've worked out an agreement as to how to help this woman. Basically, we've taken care of her. We could have some young ladies, maybe they graduate from high school, they're, when they're in college, when they're home for the summer, that they say, I want to serve in the church. In what capacity can I serve in the church? And we say, well, this lady really needs someone to help be with her. And so that person says, I'm going to go on a regular basis to their house. I'm going to help with meals. I'm going to help with cleaning. I'm just going to be a friend to this person. I'm going to help in those various capacities. It doesn't have to be a young lady. It could be someone who is a little bit older, who's not caring for small children. I mean, the dynamics for a young mother, she just can't practically do those kinds of things. But once her kids are old enough to not need that kind of care, all of a sudden a lady can do those things. And may really have a desire to do those kinds of things. So, you look at how God has gifted people in the church and where they have desires. And while it's not an office, they can have a very valuable role in some of those areas. Okay, any other question there? Let me make a couple of clarifications here. And I'm bringing this out because this is something that I dealt with in the Ghanaian culture context. And I think to some extent, some of these things are appropriate in our American context. What about a pastor's wife? Is she an officer of the church? Or a deacon's wife? Is she an officer of the church? Or an assistant pastor? Should we view him as a pastor? Or should we view him as simply somebody who is serving alongside of the pastor? Maybe he's being mentored, he's learning, he's a young man who's not yet a pastor in the full sense. How do we deal with those kinds of things? Well, first of all, let me say this. In the New Testament, there's never a talk about an assistant pastor. There's never a talk about a deacon wife's role in the church. Nor is there ever a discussion about a pastor's wife's role in the church. There's not. So we have to assume that there is no official capacity role for any of those three situations. Now, in some sense, we know that there were people who were assisting Paul in ministry. He was mentoring them, and Timothy's a great example. So when did Timothy go from being an associate to Paul to becoming his right-hand man who is now going to Ephesus and trying to set straight a huge problem? I have no idea, but at some point it happened. And so we can have young men come here into the church for a summer or maybe during Christmas break or early on after they've graduated from college or from seminary, and they serve in an assisting kind of a role. They get mentoring, they preach, and they teach. My question is, should we call them pastors if they're not formally recognized or ordained as pastors? Should we do that? I'd say no. I would say no. In fact, this is something that I really dealt with as a missionary. We'd have a young man who was 18, 19, 20 years old who would come and help a church planting missionary start a church. And when the guy's 18, he's being called pastor. Not married. He hasn't even finished his college yet. He cannot be viewed as a man in his society until he's married and has his first kid, which may not happen for 8 to 10 years for that young man. And we're calling him pastor. Let me tell you, I saw that to be an extremely confusing situation in their culture. I saw it to be very detrimental. And so I just make this general observation that we need to keep distinct if someone is being mentored and they're serving in an assisting capacity, if they want to go into the ministry, let's not call them a pastor. Let's let them get through that role like Timothy did with Paul. But then at a point in time when they are officially recognized as a pastor, then we need to make that transition. Just to keep that distinct in our minds. Or we look at a pastor's wife or a deacon's wife. So a pastor has spiritual oversight. Should a pastor be dealing one-on-one with all the ladies in the church? No. He shouldn't. Alone? No. That's a very, very dangerous situation. So a pastor has to, if he's dealing with ladies, he has to work with his wife on these things. He may have his wife completely handle that situation. Or maybe he and his wife will work together in that situation. So while a pastor's wife does not have an official role as a pastor's wife office, she basically is a major part of his ability to function in his capacity. Yeah?
Part of what you're talking about is not thus saith the Lord. It's not in the Word.
It's a practical thing.
Practical
application. Thus saith the Lord would be, there's no office called pastor's wife.
Right.
There's no office called deacon's wife. There's no office called assistant pastor. They're not in the Bible. We shouldn't create them, invent them, act as if they're there. On the practical side, if a man's married and he's doing ministry, his wife is an integral part of that. And she could ultimately disqualify him. Or his relationship to her can cause him to be disqualified. So, yes?
I guess you're probably going to get to it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
There's an aspect of calling and ordination of pastor.
Yeah, I'll flesh that out.
Yeah, okay, good.
Calling, ordination, appointment, what are all these things? Okay? That's a That's a great discussion. I think we have to make, we need to identify those terms so that we're speaking the same language. Because ordination and appointment, it's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. But we'll get into that. Another thing that we really dealt with on the mission field when we were dealing with the concept of ordination and appointment, we had a lot of discussion about that in our church. And so we had to kind of clarify and be speaking the same language on that. Yeah. So my point is that the work that a pastor does, his wife is a valuable assistant to him in that. And the work that a deacon does, his wife is a valuable assistant in that. And it may be that some of the things that a pastor does, he will actually do them through his wife in the, dealing with some ladies. Or when a deacon is dealing with some of his service, he may at times work through his wife. But we got to make sure that we don't create an office. And, in Ghana, people used to joke about this, but I think they really believed it. That the pastor's wife, she was really the one who, she guided that church. And some pastors, their wives do that. And that's not biblical. It's not healthy. It's a very bad thing. It's not good for his marriage. It's not good for the church. But, it definitely happens. Where the wife kind of completely controls where things... Huh?
It happens in the military, too. Some wives think they,
There's a tremendous need for balance when we talk about those things. But it used to be... I remember... when somebody in our church really wanted to get something done, they would go to my wife and they would present the case to her. And she would basically say something like, "I'm not your pastor. If you want to talk to my husband about that, feel free to do that. But that's who you need to talk to about this." And actually, sometimes a pastor or a deacon has to protect his wife. There are certain things that a pastor doesn't need to share with his wife. There's certain things that a deacon doesn't need to share with his wife. And when they do, it actually puts a burden on their wife that she doesn't need to carry. So, yeah.
Some helpful insight on this topic. When you asked earlier about elders, our family, and I don't know if this is this in Ghana, or but I know it's a lot of communities. My aunties, women are pretty much the council of the family.
Yeah.
They're the ones that get together and, put pressure on us to kind of keep the family together. And that matriarchal thing has actually been historically here in the United States. The community has been matriarchal. You always hear about grandma and
yeah, it's true.
Grandma says. And so this really has bled into the church. And it's interesting that you mentioned that people try to influence, because at least in our family, want to get anything done, you're going to get the buy-in of my aunties.
Yeah.
You talk to the uncle, at the end of the day, whatever auntie says is going to go. So that's kind of...
Yeah, actually, it's interesting you bring that up, because in some, even within Ghana, some of the communities are matriarchal and some are patriarchal. And that structure is there. If it's a matriarchal family system, then the aunties are... They're the family heads. And if it's patriarchal, it's the men. Yeah, and that happens. And they have something called a queen mother in villages. And the queen mother she's the top dog, man. She can be in those communities.
Local churches, by the way, they have a church mother. And
yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is very much an adaption from African cultures. Very much so. That goes back many generations.
It was intentional in the United States.
It goes.
The entire slave system was to emasculate the men. The entire mission was to keep the men subservient. They wouldn't.
Right, and that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. In America, that's.
But how is that?
In Ghana, there are places like that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, how assertive men are in a culture really determines a lot about the family structure. And in American culture today, the feminist movement is destroying masculinity systematically. It's hard to find men functioning like men in our society because there's an incredible animosity towards masculinity. It's viewed as toxic. You know. And sometimes men are toxic in how they lead. Okay, fair enough. But God does want men to be leaders, and He wants them to be humble and loving leaders, but bearing the load of responsibility and shouldering that. But, you know, shifts in cultures don't happen in a generation. They happen gradually over a period of time. Yeah. Yes?
Can I just say that in America it's authority that's challenged and men are identified with authority? I don't know that it's just because they're men. It's because authority is taught to be questioned.
Well, that's definitely a factor. It's definitely a factor. But the term toxic masculinity, it's real. And you know, there's hatred, intense hatred for what is viewed as a dominating patriarchal system. And there are some people that truly they lead in an evil way, and they have throughout history. There are people like that. But it's also kind of thrown out the baby with the bathwater, and it's gone after, we could say, biblical leadership as well. Yes?
And we have to be careful that it doesn't creep into the church.
Yes.
I remember when Scott and I were visiting different churches prior to coming here, one church stands out in my mind. It's a very male pastor led, and even a female pastor, but it was very clear that the women were the prayer leaders of this committee and that. And
yeah. Yeah, there's a cycle there. So when men don't take leadership, there's a vacuum, and then women will fill that vacuum, and then once women fill that vacuum, then men are even less likely to step up and fill that vacuum. It's a vicious cycle, and once the balance tips, and a vacuum begins to be established, it's going to get filled immediately, and. Yeah, it's sad, but in many societies, it's hard to find men who are leaders in their society. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the important takeaway from this is, as we're praying specifically for our communities, pray for the men that they step up. I mean, you look at things like mass incarceration and some of these other topics that I'm exposed to. Pray for the men to have courage, because as Joanna just mentioned, once that vacuum is filled, it's really tough to reestablish the right order of things.
Yeah.
And the temptation is to compromise and be like, well, that's just the way it is. But we really need to pray that we're raising our young men to be men, and we're praying for our neighborhood churches.
Well,
men step up.
And one of the factors, too, that we see is that once you get kind of a transition from one generation to the next, once there's not a dad in the picture, then the next generation will be a lot less assertive. And it kind of goes in that direction to the point where sometimes men didn't even realize this is what I need to do. I need to be assertive. I need to be a provider. I need to do those things. So it's a vicious cycle. And I think a lot of our cultural breakdowns are coming to the fact that a lot of fathers are not taking their roles really seriously. It's a vicious cycle. We could talk a lot about it. But. Okay. I will just mention this briefly. The work of a pastor, elder, bishop, and I, rather than saying pastor, elder, bishop every time, I'm going to use the term pastor, but realize that those three terms are all there. They can be used interchangeably. Okay? What is the work? The word bishop means overseer, and what that tells you is that a pastor has authority in the church. He has spiritual oversight. Now, that doesn't mean that the pastor has authority in your home. to dictate everything about how your home functions, okay? And some pastors do that. I mean, they are just like, control everything. Like, here's how you have to dress if you go to the grocery store. And it's like, it's not your place, buddy. It's not your place at all. And there are a lot of American Baptist fundamentalists who really step outside their bounds. When we talk about overseer, it's spiritual oversight in the church. And occasionally what's going on in the home bleeds into the church, and then you have to deal with how it is affecting the church, but you do not have the responsibility to step in and run people's homes. Some pastors feel like they have the right to pick people's spouses or to get into all those things, and they don't. It's not their role. So when we say oversight, realize that spiritual oversight in the context of church. Secondly, elder, the idea is somebody who's spiritually mature. So when you look at someone who's a pastor, you should say, this person knows the word of God. I respect their judgment. And one of the reasons that sometimes people don't become pastors for a long time is because people cannot say, I respect your judgment, your spiritual counsel, because they have not matured to the extent that they can do that. Again, I remember talking to folks in Ghana saying, could somebody be 25 and an elder? They said, yeah, they could. I said, so what's the distinction? Are they mature? And so it's not so much about age. It's not saying you're elderly. It means that you're a matured individual. That's what he's saying. And then lastly, pastor. And this is the idea of spiritual care. And 1 Peter 5:1-4 is the primary passage. Because of our time, I'm going to stop right there. But I want to start there next time. I want us to look at 1 Peter 5. It's a rich passage. It talks about the oversight. It talks about the balance of how a pastor oversees. It talks about the fact that he's going to answer to God. It talks about the fact that though he's in a position of authority, he's also one amongst the congregation. And so one of the things that you really have to appreciate about the Bible is that God's word gives balances. It gives balances. So when we hear the term authority, we're not talking about someone who is an authoritarian dictator. We're talking about somebody who has the responsibility to make decisions. He bears the consequences of those decisions, but he's also someone who is to care with care. And that's very, very important. So we'll stop there. There's a lot of rich stuff that we can discuss when we talk about these two offices. But let's go ahead and close with a word of prayer.